Welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, a weekly news digest covering events in Israel. It's relevant and accurate information you need to know, direct from the Holy Land. You're listening to Front Page Jerusalem.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, the voice of Israel to the world, brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel in the city of the great king, Jerusalem. I'm Merle Cox.
And I'm Kevin Howard in Jerusalem.
The current U.S. administration's stance on the nation of Iran is dramatically different from the previous Obama administration, as evidenced by U.S. President Donald Trump's pullout from the Iran nuclear deal in 2018. The view that the nation of Iran is indeed a real threat not only to Israel, but the entire world seems to be part of the current focus. To find an informed perspective on the real and present threat that Iran poses to Israel and the greater Middle East, Kevin Howard recently asked Professor Ephraim Imbar, the president of the Jerusalem Institute for Strategic Studies, to speak at this year's Christian Friends of Israel conference in Jerusalem. We'll bring you that enlightening message in just a moment, but first, let's hear from the CFI Jerusalem News Desk, where David Milburn has the recent headlines from Israel. David?
Thanks, Earl. 80 years have passed since the start of World War II on September the 1st, 1939. An anniversary was marked by Yad Vashem with a new online exhibition portraying the experiences of a dozen Jewish families in those first months when they had no way of knowing the events that were going to unfold. The exhibition, 1939, Jewish Families on the Brink of War, describes the progression of the war using Holocaust-era documents, photographs and artifacts from Yad Vashem archives, many of which were donated by Holocaust survivors and families. It was necessary for Israel to attack an Iranian weapons shipment in the country of Iraq last week. Iran has found it difficult getting key weapons to Hezbollah by shipments into Syria without the Israelis finding out about them and destroying them. As a result, the expanding territory of Iran's influence has seen them putting down deep roots in Iraq. Before we return to Earl, here's today's This Page in History.
On September 12, 1864, Great Britain officially authorized archaeological work in Israel that began with the work of the Palestine Exploration Fund. A party of Royal Engineers, which provided military engineering and other technical support to the British Armed Forces, under the command of Captain Charles W. Wilson, arrived in Jerusalem from Britain, where they were to begin the first modern survey of the ancient city to include a variety of biblical sites. Captain Wilson conducted a survey of Jerusalem and its monuments. The primary aim of the work was to promulgate methods to improve the city's polluted water quality and to produce an accurate topographical map of the land. The survey also served to initiate the subsequent recovery of artifacts, which have served to validate or accentuate text narratives depicted in the Holy Bible, foreshadowing modern biblical archaeology and reaffirming Jewish heritage in the land. Biblical archaeology remains a key component in establishing the validity of the nation of Israel and its sovereign right to exist here.
Welcome back, everybody. Kevin Howard brings us fresh insight into the current Middle East situation from Ephraim Imbar, who recently spoke at the 2019 Christian Friends of Israel conference in Jerusalem concerning the threat that Iran poses to Israel and the rest of the world.
Thanks, Earl. And as you know, this year's Christian Friends of Israel conference in Jerusalem was held during the time of Shavuot, or Pentecost, and was entitled Celebrating the Revelation. As you mentioned, Professor Ephraim Imbar, the president of the Jerusalem Institute for Strategic Studies, addressed an international audience that gathered together in Jerusalem. Here's part of his very informative message concerning Iran's threat to the Middle East.
It's a pleasure to be among friends. I hope I'll not spoil your appetite before lunch, you know, speaking about the Middle East and Iran. In any case, if there is anything I want you to remember from my talk, is that here, in this area, we live in a different time zone. You come to Israel, everything looks normal, shopping centers, buses, everything is working. This is very unusual in the Middle East. And if you want to judge the Middle East by Western standards, by what you know from home, it doesn't work. And I'll give you a few of the characteristics of the Middle East to make sure that you understand the context in which we see the rise of Iran. First of all, what we have witnessed in the Middle East is a grand failure at modernization. The people in the region have not made the necessary strides to enter the modern world. There was an attempt to bring modernization to the Middle East. This is the Arab Spring. It failed. We are back at the dictators. We are back at terrible economies. We are back at oppression and poverty. This is the main characteristic of most of the Middle East. They failed also at state building. You know, a state, some people that studied maybe political science or political studies, is a political entity that has monopoly over use of force. In your countries, probably you have one military and one police. It ain't so here. We see in many countries militias. We have a national army maybe, but we have also militias. We have no monopoly over use of force. Take a look at what's happening in Libya today. A civil war between militias. Take a look at what's happening in Syria. A lot of militias. Some of them are suppressed now by Iranian and Russian intervention. But they are still militias. And the central government, what's left of the central government, is not able to rule over all the country because they are opposing militias. This is true of Iraq. This is true of Yemen. We have a Houthi militia and a pro-Saudi militia. The Palestinians, our neighbors, they have militias. One militia took over control of Gaza. And not even there, there is monopoly over use of force because we have an organization named Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and there are clans with weapons. So there is no really strong state. We have very few strong states. Egypt, Turkey, Iran, of course. But the rest are countries with militias. And of course, we can talk about democracy. All this is nonsense. The Americans tried courageously, putting a lot of money, putting a lot of lives of their soldiers to try to bring democracy to Iraq. It is a grand failure. Actually, we warned them. Forget about democracy in Iraq. And they tried also in Afghanistan, of all places, which is also a failure. All this attempt to bring from outside democracy is not working. The local forces are too strong and always resist outside intervention. Another clear feature of the Middle East is a great appeal of radical Islamists. And of course, Iran is part of it. But it's not only Iran. Every free election in the Middle East ends up with the victory of the Islamists. This was true of Egypt. This was true of Tunisia. This was true of the Palestinian elections that the Americans forced us to allow in the Palestinian territories. Hamas took over. If you have free elections, the Islamists are winning for simple reasons. People look at their rulers. People look at the Islamists. The Islamists look nicer. The Islamists take care of the people. Bring education, not the type of education I want for my children or for your children, but it's education system. They take care of the poor. They take care of the sick. There is social work. They have networks of social work. They are well entrenched into Middle Eastern societies. And this is why they are successful. To some extent, I have no problem with their domestic agenda. Yeah, they want better life for their people. Of course, I have a slight problem with their foreign policy agenda, which wants me in the sea. But this is part of the region. Be it Sunni, be it Shiite. This area is also conflict-ridden. Many conflicts. The Turks vis-à-vis the Syrians, the Turks vis-à-vis the Kurds, the Iraqis against the Iranians. There was a long war, 8 years of war. Yemen, they are fighting now. In Libya, they are fighting. All over, we see conflict, and many times, this conflict is violent. There is a clear difference between the West and the Middle East in terms of strategic culture. Here, use of force is part and parcel of the rules of the game. Of course, it's always better to attain goals without using the force. But if you can't do it, you use force. And it's popular. People like their leaders to use force. Saddam Hussein was extremely popular when he attacked Iran, when he attacked Kuwait. Not only that, the threat perception in this region is very high, meaning people are afraid of their neighbors. This is a real feeling, and this influences policy making. This is why one of the regions where much money is spent on arms is here, in the Middle East. Now the Asians have a greater consumption of arms because they have a nice neighbor like China that everybody fears. So they are also buying weapons, including from Israel. So everybody is afraid. Sometimes I have problems explaining to my students that we, Israel, of course, we have a high threat perception. And I tell them, it's not only us. Take a look at the region. Our neighbor, Jordan, is afraid of Iraq, is afraid of Syria, is afraid of subversion from Iran, is afraid from their neighbor, the Saudis, that may take over. The Syrians are afraid of the Turks, are afraid of the Iraqis. Iranians are afraid from their neighbors. They have a neighbor, nuclear neighbor like Pakistan. And of course, the Americans are in the region, and they're afraid of an American invasion. Probably with good reason. The Americans invaded two of their neighbors, Iraq and Afghanistan. They really think that they might be next. I wish it to be so, but I don't think it will happen. So everybody is afraid. They use force. It's an entirely different picture from what you see in the West, particularly in Europe. The Europeans think they live in a paradise. No enemy. The word enemy in Europe is almost not used. It's not politically correct to use the word enemy. And of course, they don't use much force. There is another clear feature of the Middle East, which is the issue of borders. Borders have no legitimacy, meaning that they are challenged. By now, there is no big dispute between Canada and the United States over its border. Although the Canadians in the 1920s were still preparing for an American invasion. It sounds a different world. Yeah, it was a different world. Now it's, in America, borders are borders. In Europe, borders are borders. Here, most borders are challenged. And there are conflicts over borders. Of course, between Israel and some of its neighbors. Iran and Iraq, a long war was about the border. The Iranians took over a few islands in the Gulf because they think it belongs to me. From the United Arab Emirates. Big Tam, Small Tam, those are the names of the islands. And of course, they have power to do it. The Emirates are a small nation. So the big guy takes it because he has the power to take it. Also, there are ideologies in the Middle East that erode the legitimacy of borders. The first such ideology was pan-Arabism. There were Arab states. At the same time, there was a widespread ideology of pan-Arab nationalism, which its objective was to unite all the Arab world into one entity. I don't know if you remember, Nasser, the president of Egypt, was one of the advocates of this ideology. This ideology basically undermines the national borders.
As Christians continue to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, it's wise to remember to also pray for the people of that region of the world who are dealing with the constant threat posed by the nation of Iran. Right now, however, we need to take a quick break so that you can hear about a wonderful outreach project of Christian Friends of Israel that's making a tangible difference in the lives of so many people in the land of Israel today.
The nature of the wars does not change, but the nature of the enemy does. These are the words of Yossi Baidatz, Major General, Israel's Defense Forces, regarding the nature of Israel's enemies who are bent on terror. Groups like Hamas and Hezbollah know that the defenders of Israel value life, and the terrorists look for ways to exploit this for their own gain. Due to the reckless behavior of terror organizations, the IDF exercises great caution in the use of deadly force to avoid harming civilians, even while increasing the danger to themselves. But this is the price you pay when you value human life. And this is the battle the IDF faces every day. Hi, I'm Jim McKenzie, Project Coordinator for CFI's Project David's Shield. I have witnessed firsthand how these selfless warriors commit to training and learning the skills required to protect their homeland, defending those who cannot defend themselves, while at the same time protecting innocent civilian lives. By choosing life, these soldiers win a victory on their own personal battlefield within. They choose light over darkness and life over death, blessings instead of curses. When we do this, we align ourselves with the God who created light and all that He says is good.
Christian Friends of Israel's project, David's Shield. Just one more way we're making a difference in Israel, one life at a time. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Let's return to Professor Ephraim Imbar's insightful message about Iran's threat to the Middle East, which he delivered at this year's Christian Friends of Israel conference in Jerusalem, in front of an international audience from more than 18 nations.
And now let us move to Iran. In this context, Iran is a rising power in the Middle East. I must start with who is Iran? You know, you have to understand that Iran is a state, a strong state, in contrast to other states in the Middle East, which are usually small and weak. Iran, over 80 million people, strategically located, with much income, you know, $60 to $90 billion a year income from oil exports, so a state with capabilities, and a much more sophisticated culture than the Arabs. It's a different category. Sometimes I think to myself that we are lucky to have around us Arab neighbors. Iranians are much more dangerous. It's an old civilization, thousands of years. It has also an imperial heritage. Iran, which is Persia, was an imperial power in the Middle East, has ruled all this region, has ruled over the Arabs. They looked down upon Arabs, like the Turks, who also were an imperial power. So they have an imperial history, and this is part of their identity. They think that Persia is destined to rule over the Middle East. They want, which something which sounds familiar to you probably, they want Iran to make Iran great again. Iran has this imperial layer, and since 79, an additional layer was added to the Iranian-Persian entity, and they had an Islamic revolution. We see a new elite, which is religious, very religious, and they actually adopted a very radical version of the Shiite version of Islam. In the world, we have two types of Muslims. No, generally speaking, there are more types. But we have Sunnis, which is the majority of the Arab, of the Muslim world. And we have Shiites, which are a minority. The largest Shiite country is Iran. The Shiites have suffered for years oppression by Sunnis. And now it's time to get back. This explains to some extent their zeal, their willingness to tolerate losses. They're ready to pay in blood, in treasure, to attain their goals. We see a jihadist regime intent on taking over the Middle East and beyond it. The title of my talk was Iranian Threat to the Middle East. They have a greater appetite than the Middle East. Because according to Islam, Islam must eventually rule over all the world. I don't know if you are aware between this distinction between Dar al-Islam, the world of Islam, and the rest of the world is called Dar al-Harb. Harb is war, is a sword, which eventually has to be conquered in order to transform it into Dar al-Islam. In this respect, there is no difference between Shiites and Sunnis. And there are, nowadays, two dynamics which make Iran very dangerous. One is their almost natural quest for hegemony in the Middle East. This is part of their culture. And the second dynamic is, of course, nuclear proliferation. They want the bomb. Now, in terms of acquiring hegemony in the Middle East, we've seen the Iranians making much progress in a very sophisticated way. First of all, they are using proxies, primarily Shiite minorities, in order to do their job. For example, the first example and the most important example, which they want to emulate in other places, is Hezbollah in Lebanon. Hezbollah represents the Shiite population in Lebanon, which is not a majority. Maybe it's the largest ethnic group, religious group in Lebanon. They armed Hezbollah. They fund Hezbollah. And Hezbollah was successful to take over the country. There is no free Lebanon. There is not such a thing as a Lebanese state. It's a state controlled by Hezbollah. The army, the media, in the last month, they took over the banks, the health services, because there is much money there. I want to tell you a clear thing. I think that what the Americans are doing now in helping to arm the Lebanese army is a huge mistake, because everything goes to Hezbollah. There is not such a thing as an independent state. So Hezbollah is there working for Iran. They are totally subservient to Iran. And when Iran told them, listen, our ally in Syria is in danger because there was a big civil war and Assad regime was in danger. Assad and the Iranians have been partners since the revolution. It is one of the oldest alliances in the Middle East. And of course, they don't want Assad to lose to a Sunni coalition. So they intervened and they sent the Hezbollah. Thousands of Hezbollah militiamen went to fight for the Assad regime in order to make sure that this alliance between Assad, who is not a Sunni, he is some other sect that eventually received a kosher certificate from Tehran mullahs, they want this relationship. Not only that, of course, they want to reach the Mediterranean, this famous Shiite corridor via Iraq and Syria to the Mediterranean. You know, my American students are not always familiar with the map. Believe me that if you go west from Iran, first it's Iraq, afterwards it's Syria, and also Lebanon. So Lebanon is in their hands already. Syria is also in their hands. What we are doing now in Syria is actually preventing the Iranians from establishing a permanent base. We fight almost every day there. Our airplanes, our missiles attack Iranian targets. They are not vegetarians, the Iranians. They are sending missiles to us. They are sending armed UAVs. There is a war between us and Iran in Syria. Of course, there is a covert war between us and them all over the world. We just warned the Americans about Iranian plans that were executed in the Gulf against oil ships, tankers. So Lebanon is a model, and they are doing it in Syria. In Syria, it's Hezbollah, but not only Hezbollah. The Iranians are smart enough to mobilize Shiite groups, which are usually oppressed, neglected in their countries, and they have Afghani militias, Shiite militias, they have Iraqi Shiite militias in Syria, and of course in Iraq, and they do the work for them. And the works means fighting, establishing also schools, converting Sunnis to Shia, making sure that their imprint in their country, in those countries, is permanent. This is what we try to prevent in Syria, that is our northern neighbor. But they are also in Yemen. And there is a group in Yemen called Houthis, which most people never heard, you know, until a few years ago. And those Houthis, armed by the Iranians, are fighting against another group in Yemen to establish control over Yemen. And Yemen is important strategically. Look at the map. This is the entrance to the Red Sea, to the Suez Canal. There were already attacks on American ships beyond the recent events, signaling to the Americans and to the West, listen, we are here. We can stop the oil, not only at the Hormuz Straits. We can stop the oil via the Suez Canal. You know, the other route is around Africa, which is much more expensive.
Thanks, Kevin, for that quite informative message from Professor Ephraim Imbar concerning the current conditions and threats facing Israel and the rest of the world coming from the nation of Iran and its many proxies around the globe. Well, our time is almost finished for this week, but before we go, let's take another visit to the CFI Jerusalem News Desk, where David Milburn has the recent headlines from Israel.
Thanks again, Earl. Israel has developed a new technology that can deal with hostile drones. The system can detect hostile drones at a range of up to 2 miles and take control of about 200 drones at the same time. We have the ability to disrupt communications between the drone and its operator and then to remotely take control of it and land it to check what it is carrying and to whom it belongs. Israel's national airline, El Al, has announced that it will be opening new weekly flights to Israel from the nations. There will now be 3 weekly flights between Tel Aviv and Dublin in the Irish Republic and between the western German city of Dusseldorf. Additional routes can bring additional tourists into the land, but they can also bring more Jews home to make Aliyah.
Thanks, David. Well, that's our show for today, everybody. We hope that you've enjoyed the program, and don't forget to continue to pray for the peace of Jerusalem and all those in Israel. And let me invite you to join us again right here next week as we bring you the latest news headlines from the Middle East. And please, please don't forget to support this station because it supports Israel. So for now, on behalf of the entire staff of Front Page Jerusalem, I'm Earl Cox reminding you that because God loves Israel, I do too.
You've been listening to Front Page Jerusalem. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com. Front Page Jerusalem is brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel Jerusalem, making a difference in Israel one life at a time. Front Page Jerusalem is a production of Level E Media Incorporated.